Welcome to VFN Radio. It is Thursday and we are live talking to you about, we hope, a now word, an encouraging word, an inspiring word, an oh my goodness word. That's right. VFN Radio, I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me today is the producer of VFN Radio program, Pat Hamilton.
Hello.
And the one, the only, who does have hair on his head, almost, this morning, John Ramos.
Hello, hello.
We are going to be talking about some humorous moments in the mountains of North Carolina. Pat will be sharing with us about that. And as well, we'll be talking about bullying. You ever heard about bullying? We're not going to talk personally what happened, BC, between the Sons of Thunder. We're talking about what's happening today and the bullying that's taking place. Yes, I'm talking about the bully pulpit of Washington, D.C., and how we need to respond to being poked in the chest on every occasion. We're also going to be talking about the wisdom moment. We need wisdom. We're going to be talking about gossip. Did you know that gossip separates close friends? Did you know that? Did you know that if we go around gossiping, that we could divide people? Do you know that the word devil actually means one who gets in between and divides? Listen, we got so many good things in store for you today. You're listening to VFN Radio. I am your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me is Pat Hamilton.
Hello.
And John Ramos.
Hello, hello.
Oh, here we are. I mean, I was just looking this morning trying to cheer myself up as I was watching you being carried over the threshold of the island, over the sand, by a minister in Pittsburgh. Man, that was a beautiful, that was just amazing, right?
Did that bring home to your soul there? Did that encourage you?
Yeah, and I got to confess, you know, that I actually text that picture to Elijah, and he and I were talking about
it. Oh, you did?
He comes back, I don't know what he meant. What does LOL mean? I mean, he was like, LOL on me back.
Really?
I was telling
lots of laughter.
I was telling Elijah and Isaiah, we always see each other after a week of just intensity, and they've intensely played. You know, we've intensely, you know, been with the Lord, with leaders for a whole week, and we look at each other and go, "Hey, you know, I love you. I'm so tired. Hopefully, I can come up there and spend some time with them in New Jersey.
Come on.
Oh my goodness, man. So what's tell me what's going on?
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, I'm on my plane ride back.
Well, you're flying your Cessna? Your Cessna? Your Cessna?
What was that?
Your Cessna? Your Cessna. You don't make it in front of my lips. My lips. Go ahead.
I was flying back, and I had a chance to sit next to an awesome, awesome man by the name of Pete.
The way they designed today's airline, you have a chance to sit really next to people.
Oh, my goodness. Too close. Yeah, He's an elderly man. And bless his heart, he tapped me on my shoulders just before I got ready to take off and says, "I hate to bother you, but I need to go to the restroom." I said, "Well, you're not bothering me." So I get up, get my stuff, and he comes back and he says, "You know, I'm 80 years old." He doesn't even look more than 60. He says, "I'm 80 years old. When you get older," he says, "everything just doesn't work as well. My bladder doesn't work as well, and I got to get up often." And so we got to talking about, you know, our elderly and in our country and how much we can learn from them. We had such an awesome conversation.
You were complaining in front of a 75-year-old man?
No. I wasn't complaining.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying.
Are you being...
I don't know. It just could be on my lift, you know. Could be on my lift.
No. And we just had an awesome conversation about our country and just about, you know, how much this younger generation can learn from our elders and those that have gone before us. And it's just really awesome talking about that perspective and some of the things he had learned and some of the things that he had went through. He's in his 80s, and
I thought he was 75. Man, he was rapidly aging. Was he 75 or 80?
He's 80.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's young. That's young. It's very young.
Very young. Very young. And so we just had this. We're talking about just the things that are happening with the gun control and the things that are happening
on the plane.
Yes,
they have air marshals up there.
on the plane.
He had whisper guns. I used to have a gun.
Yeah, don't say the word B-O. No, don't say it.
That's how they say it now. I have a friend that owns a gun.
Yeah, right.
And if he was to, what would happen to him?
So anyway, that was Pete. We just had a good time talking. I tell you, we can learn so much from those that have gone before us. And it's just really pleasant. It was a pleasant time on the way back.
When I was 14 years old, a couple of days ago, I had a job with my father. He had an assisted living facility, which is not a nursing home, but it's a time, you know, when you're assisted living and for the elderly,
right,
or the challenge, but mostly it was elderly at that time. I was 14. Everybody was elderly. People in their 20s was elderly when I was 14. Anyway, so, you know, Dad, you know, I helped out, you know, manage the facility and work with some of the employees there. And it was like having a whole bunch of grandmothers and grandfathers and all that. And I just loved it. I just really loved it. And Dad had gotten sick, and he had to go to New Orleans Ochsner Clinic to be able to get an operation done. Give a shout out to you this morning, Dad. And, of course, when they're cutting you open, you don't have time to think about the business. And so I basically ran. I ran it at 14 years old and buying groceries. I bought groceries. Let me tell you, I bought enough groceries so I should never have to buy groceries again.
Really?
I walked through the store today like a museum. Whoa, look at all them Cheerios. I mean, you know, I don't mind not buying groceries. Mm-hmm. But I would buy maybe 5-6 buggies of groceries. I mean, for 40 people. And, you know, food and all the different things that had to be taken. It was a lot less regulations back then. We ate better.
I bet you did. Yeah. I've seen you shop.
You did? Oh, yeah. Right. I don't know how to do it. Do I know how to do it?
Oh, man, you do it up.
When I saw the price of groceries when I was in Georgia, if I didn't have my Ayabai armband on, I was so upset. You know, anyway. But I just thought, you know, if God had not called me to what I'm doing, mm-hmm, I would have my own assisted living facility, you know, basically a whole bunch of grandmothers and grandfathers that my life would just be all wrapped around them and just spending time with them, cooking food, loving on them, you know, being there with them. And I just love that. It's a wonderful thing. As a matter of fact, if you're feeling called to that, the baby boomers are cranking it up. I think 10,000 are retiring a day now.
Yeah.
And that's a good occupation if you want to think about it and begin to research it. And think about it. We need somebody who's going to take care of this generation as we get to that point. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can have a couple that you can move into a house that has room for a couple extra rooms that you can say, you know what, I'm gonna be there for this generation that was there for me that allowed me to be here now. Yeah. And I think the laws are different states, but then you can have two to four different people in your home, and they'll help you. They'll actually help you take care of those individuals. Once you get a certain number, I don't know what it is now, you have all these new regulations where you got to run fire water systems and, you know, halon systems for stoves, and it's you got to widen the hallways, you know, so people can do a 15-point turnaround in a wheelchair. I mean, it's amazing. But if you keep your number small, I mean, you could be there, you know, for the elderly. But I would be that. I mean, that was when God called me. That's what I was focused. Yeah. That's what I was going to do. So I agree with you. I encourage you, if you have time, make part of your ministry, you know, ministering to the elderly in your community, in your neighborhood. Find out, you know, who's in your immediate, who's on your street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you know, he was so focused when we first got on the plane, and we were talking to him. I don't think he even heard us in the beginning, only to find out later as we began to talk, he was from Camden, New Jersey, had lived in Florida, and he was visiting his daughter, because his son-in-law had just passed away. And son-in-law was only 53 years old and just died in his sleep. And so here's this 80-year-old man getting ready to come up to New Jersey, be there for his grandchildren, and still being faithful and feels this amazing burden to be there for the daughter. And it was just awesome. It was just awesome being able just to talk with him, you know, about his past and about the things he overcome, and now how he feels the burden of continuing to pass the wisdom that he learned to the next generation, and had a chance to pray with them. And it's just cool, man. I love talking to elders and seniors. It reminded me when we went during the hurricane, we went to go help out some folks that were without power. We ran into an elderly lady who was by herself. Bless her heart, we were able to give her some food and some resources, but I tell you, check on your neighbors. Check on your elderly, because they need us.
I'll check on you. I understand. check I understand. On me. There's a selfish check motive, please. And I'll check on you.
Check
I'll
check on me. On you.
Elijah, you need to check on the elderly in your home there.
He does. He does a good job on me.
Yeah, isn't he? I mean, he keeps you straight, right? So, I mean, as soon as you landed, he looked at you and said, let's get busy with the father's business. Do you remember that? Let's get busy. Like, oh, dog. Elijah was taking notes. He was taking notes.
He was paying attention.
He's been texting me, let me know what's up. No, no. Listen, you're not going to believe this. You could believe it. I don't know.
Try us.
Okay, I'll try it.
Give it a shot.
Well, it all started when I was born. No, it was started in Franklin, North Carolina.
That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. 7,000 years ago. I was in this log cabin on top of a mountain. On top of a mountain. I mean, the beautiful Smoky Mountains. They call it Smoky Mountains because the clouds kind of settle on top of the mountains, and it looks like there's smoke. It looks like they're on fire, actually, because of the thin clouds. And just a time to spend with the Lord and to pray, and I was blessed with a cabin there and had a nice big old back porch on it. And I was on top of the mountain, and there's a couple houses on this mountain. It's kind of hard. If you never lived on a mountain, it's kind of hard to explain. But you feel all alone.
Yeah.
And so I was on top, so there's a couple scatterings of houses on the mountain down there somewhere. Mm. And it was just so peaceful. You know, you go out there in the morning, had this big swing on the back porch, and you'd sit there and just swing in the morning as you're watching the wood-eating bee devour the log cabin.
Wow.
Of course, I committed war on it. You know, I'm going to kill that thing. It's killing this cabin. And so, you know, drinking your coffee early in the morning, looking over the Smoky Mountains, just beautiful out there. And so I thought, you know, one night I was thinking, man, it's a beautiful starry night. Stark as can be, but you can look up in the skies. It was winter, and all the leaves have fallen off the trees, and they've dried up all over the place. And I've been, you know, a couple days in this cabin, so I'm just kind of just caught up in all this. You know, I'm just going to go out on the back porch and sit in this swing, and I'm going to just, you know, the heavenly host, just look at all the stars and how beautiful it was. And so I grabbed me a blanket and got me a cup of something warm, and I went outside, closed the door behind me, got on the back porch, went to the swing on the far corner right there, and I'm swinging thinking, oh, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the moment. I mean, this is totally, totally beautiful. I'm looking at the stars. Of course, there's gross darkness over the top of the mountain, so you can't see the mountain, but you can look straight up and see the stars. And all of a sudden, out the middle of nowhere, as I was sitting on the swing, in a log cabin in the middle of top of this mountain, I hear. I'm thinking, man, my hair shot up on my neck. I'm thinking, something's walking around this cabin. Then it got closer. And I'm thinking, you know, your mind goes crazy. I heard about these mountain people. You can't see nothing, you know.
Is it Bigfoot?
Oh, I'm telling you, man. I mean, my mind's like, Satan was there, like every fiery dart, every fire, right, smack dab in my head at the one moment. And here I was trapped on the end of this long porch on this swing. Didn't care about no heavenly host, no stars. And I'm telling you, man, I look like Batman. That blanket I had was flapping off me like a cape, and I flew so fast in the back of that door. I slammed the door. I closed the door.
Are you serious?
Oh, come on.
My goodness.
That could have been it, man.
And what I thought was just, I thought was so beautiful. You know, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, now I'm trapped. And the only way you can get cell service is to go back where that swing is and lean over the rail for a half a bar. And I think, I can't call nobody. Oh, my goodness. It was amazing. So, needless to say, from then on, I spent my time. In the daytime on the back porch for the nighttime. I was deadbolted in and I was secure. So, Pat, man, what's God been saying to you?
Oh, my goodness. I was just reading this morning about, you know, Paul, he was talking about, you know, he was, you know, if anybody had something to boast about, you know, he started listing up all these different things he could boast about. But I'm not going to do that because, you know, that would not be good, obviously. And then he says, starts talking about, but I will boast of my weaknesses.
Man, you got enough time?
I don't know. We might be here a while.
This is only a 10-year program.
Exactly. And then he goes into talking about, you know, but God did give me this thorn in my, or he sent this messenger of Satan, a thorn in my flesh, to torment me. And
to torment me.
To torment him.
And that, is that something?
Right.
God, I just want to thank you for my torment. This is the thing about it.
Yeah.
My prayer last morning. Thank you for my torment. Thank you.
I don't think that's ever crossed my mind.
Has it? It definitely crossed your flesh, right?
Oh, yeah. A few times. A few times. But man, he just says, you know what? It was a blessing, really, because
it was. It is was, it over with?
Well, no, because it's always continuous.
Oh, Paul said it was a blessing.
Paul, it was a blessing.
I thought you were talking about yourself. I'm sorry. No. I was like, wow, it's gone.
I haven't gotten there
what
yet.
What did you do, man? You need to preach Sunday. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, right. That, you know, he's going to boast. I'm going to boast in my weaknesses because that's where the power of God lies.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Because without that, then it's just my flesh. It's just me doing it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it was just another reminder. It's like, okay, I can deal with this. I can, you know, no matter how many weaknesses, no matter how many things crawl over my flesh, you know, I'm going to boast.
Or your flesh crawls over.
That's all right. That's all right.
Well, you think about it. You know, you think about the power in the church today.
Yeah.
Or the lack of power in the church today.
Exactly.
Could it be because there's so much pride in the church today that we don't want to talk about our weaknesses? Mm-hmm. And then there's offense when somebody does
brings
talk
it
about
up.
Your weaknesses. Right, right.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Let's take
I had issues with pride, but now you offended me talking about what I had pride over. And that's, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, and the power you want, we want, and that's one reason why we have Meet My Father as well, because we want to make sure that, you know, that everybody knows that we are sinners saved by grace and that there's nothing good in us but God. And if you hadn't yet gone to VFN TV and listened or watched There's No One Good But God, you've got to listen to that because it'll empower you to be who you are, a sinner saved by grace, who God's in love with, who will work his power through you if you acknowledge that you're a clay vessel.
Exactly.
You know, Paul said, I'm of a sinner's, I'm the chiefest. Mm-hmm. You know, practice telling your real testimony. Mm. I mean, you can't go on forever because people don't want to hear it. After a while. It's like, okay, how many more crack lines did you shoot? So like, right. But you know, the gist of it is says that, you know, you were in darkness. You loved sin and you didn't know God. But once you found God, you left your life of sin. It's not that you haven't sinned since then. But now it hurts when you sin. It's something you don't want to do. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you hate and that you stay away from and you seek God to empower you to stay away from it. And through the power of the cross of Christ and our total dependency on it, which you also can watch and listen to that on VFN TV. Listen, you got to be empowered. A lot of times people make the right decision in the beginning and what's begun in the spirit, they try to fulfill it in the flesh. And they think, you know, I've tried not to sin. I just gave in to it. It's like, no. You couldn't do it. That's why he died for us. We couldn't do it. But now he's going to empower us versus the false doctrine being preached today that there's a grace that says sin means nothing anymore. It doesn't matter. It's like it just replaced the word sin with grace. That's not true. Mm-hmm. Not a license to sin. But the thing is that now our dependency is on him to fulfill the very thing that we couldn't fulfill. But he empowers us when we put our total trust, not in our works, not in our accomplishment, not I read 2 chapters a day and I pray for 74 hours and all that kind of stuff. But you're putting your dependency and your trust on God. Mm-hmm. And he empowers you to be able to walk free. And you know, and you begin to embrace those things because we have a tendency to get prideful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether the pride is just outright arrogance. Or it is false humility where people are going like, I'm just a bad person. I'm just bad. And that's pride. It's like right. I. Anytime it starts with I,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It's pretty much the root of that's pride. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then a constant self-awareness. You ever seen those? They're like the sun. You just kind of rotate around those people. It don't matter. You get into a room and all of a sudden everybody in the room just start rotating around them. I am the gravity. Yeah. I keep everybody, you know, I'm aware of me. I'm the right. Hot ball of gas floating in the room. You know, the sun. Anyway, mm-hmm. So, yeah, and so that's pride. And the first pride, everybody can identify with that pretty much. They can see it and notify, you know, look at it. But the false humility, quite often people go, oh, man, he or she's always just thinking they're just, you know. Are they bringing themselves up? Is that
again?
Are we talking about them? Is this a Bible study or a therapy for them? I mean, how many times are we going to bring up? I didn't know I was a psychologist. I didn't sign up for psychology. 101, and therapy, you know, 102, mm-hmm. that we're supposed to love God and God's going to minister to us. I don't know if you know, they've got a big old smile over coming in the studio here. We're not going to say who's smiling, but it's so funny. But I want to encourage you as we're going to a break right here that just like Pat was hearing from the Lord this morning about, you know, begin to embrace the thorn, embrace humility. This is Pat's favorite quote, and it was written by Rick Joyner, and it's actually written by our lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're not ready until you're ready to be humiliated for the sake of those who are humiliating you. We talk about $16 trillion. Our deficit, you know, our debt is $16 trillion, they say. And you're about to hear in a couple days, they're going to want to raise the debt ceiling, borrow more money. But I'm going to let you hear Rick Joyner talk about this at a ministers' conference this year, as he talks about the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and what our true debt is. They said it's $200 trillion. $200 trillion. Listen up.
Okay. But they're also, he called them hypocrites who didn't know the signs of the times. They couldn't read the signs of the times. The mark of the beast is an economic mark. And the economy is going to be the ultimate issue.
But think about that. This is so important because we've been talking about this, the beast economy. Mm. When you read about the end time, you know, assault on the earth, of Satan, it's going to be, has to do with money and how things are bought and how things are sold, and it's going to be the economy. That's what we're looking at right now. We're looking at a crescendo of how things are going to transition into that, and that's what he's talking about right now. It's the beast economy. Listen up.
And understand the economy. Understand God's economy, his way, learning to deal with our whatever he entrusts with us is fundamental. He even said, I can't trust you with the real wealth, the spiritual riches, if you don't learn how to handle this unrighteous mammon.
You think about it, it's so important, because what he's talking about here is what we've been talking about. We're trying to let you know what he's told us, and there's others that are talking too, and Rick's even talking to Rick Joyner of Morningstar Ministries. We're telling you. We're saying, listen to the signs of the times. People are looking square into a tsunami and saying, listen, let's just go swimming. It's like, it's a tsunami. It's destruction. You know, we can prepare for this. We can brace ourselves. Listen up.
Got to get this right. So we need to do it. We also need, you know, I don't know if you saw what came out just last week. I went back and read it, found the source. The International Monetary Fund determined that the real debt of the U.S., it's not $15 trillion, not $16 trillion. And those who really knew or who were the most astute have been saying for years, no, it's really closer to 65 or 70 trillion. The International Monetary Fund said no. They did all these long studies, computation, said it's over $200 trillion.
Do that. 200.
Wow.
200 trillion. And these guys know this.
Oh.
But we, as God's people, we know it too. God tells us we don't need artificial intelligence. We don't need Google or Android, or we know. God lets his people know what's about to happen. Listen, there is no turning back from, listen up.
The U.S. debt, their estimation, you could tax everybody in America 100% from now on, not begin to pay for our debt.
Think about it. Tax everybody, everything. Mm-hmm. And there is no way out of this. Listen, we are 46 states, And it was actually, Rick was talking about this, 46 states. And God has given, you know, Rick Joyner a anointing to draw, you know, government and intelligence and all this together. And he's talking to the leaders of our nation. And he's talking to those who are in the International Monetary Fund and those that are in CIA and those who understand what's taking place. So he's just not talking off the top of his head. In addition, it's just bearing witness of what God has been telling them all along, and it's bearing witness. That's why we're doing it, because, you know, let things be established, you know, in more than one witness, and that's realize right. that there you could prepare yourself right now. You can put your faith and trust in money, or you can put your faith and trust in God. You can't serve them both. And listen, I don't know how much time you have, but even if you have 5 seconds left before this happens, it's still good to be on the right side of history, that you trusted him before you had to, because everybody's going to have to.
Right.
I mean, you're going to have to. You're going to get to a point where we're going to either, you know, serve the adversary, or we're going to serve God in an open way, in a very shameful way.
And the question is what we're talking about all the time. We're talking about this all the time. Listen, it is so important. You've got to learn God's voice. You've got to be able to hear his voice and obey. And we call that abiding. We talk about it all the time. There's a reason why, because what's about to happen, your only hope and your only chance of survival is that you know God, and survival in the context of living through this in a way that you're free, is to know God, to abide with God, to hear his voice and obey it. As a matter of fact, even Rick's talking about it right now. Listen up.
Things coming out we really need to pay attention to and get ready. But the simplicity of devotion to Christ is absolutely essential. The simplicity. And our response, we need to hear his word. We need to get to know his voice better, be absolutely resolved to know his voice better. And we need to get better at obeying his voice. Then we'll be on the rock. It doesn't matter what storms come, we're on the rock.
Listen, that's so very, very important because, listen, God loves, if you'll study God, if you'll study his word, then you'll understand he always rescues his people. He always has a plan to bring us out. You have to listen to his plan. You have to know him. You have to understand how to hear his voice. Yeah. And we even have on VFN TV where you can actually, you know, listen how to hear the voice of God. But listen, right now, you need to begin to abide with God, just like Rick Joyner of Morningstar Ministries is saying. And if you don't have a plan, we have a plan for you, a simple plan. It needs to be simple. It doesn't need to be tied into technology, and it's at iabide.org. We have a free plan for you. Go request your plan today at iabide.org. Welcome back to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me is Pat Hamilton and John Ramos. You've got to listen to this. This is so important. What I'm about to talk about. I'm going to be talking about the bully pulpit. I'm going to be talking about the Washington's bully pulpit. This is so important, and I'm hoping that I'm going to encourage you, you know, to not let them push you into rage, not let them push you into rebellion and lawlessness, but to understand, you know, what is our response as Christians? You know, what response should we have to what's going on right now? When you think about a bully. I mean, think about a bully in school, or I think they ran for political office. But anyway, mm-hmm. Think about a bully in school that they pick. Their goal is to be able to pick on someone and try to keep poking at them and getting them angry so that they'll take a swing at them. And understand that if they wanted just to dominate the person, they could have just done it to begin with. But for some reason, they're picking at the person because they want to get the person, to the child or the kid, to make the first move so they can say, you know, he started swinging at me. So, you know, and what happens is it has nothing to do with the kid that they're picking, the bully's picking on. It has to do with all this rage and this anger and these twisted emotions inside that kid. And he or she's looking for an outlet, and they just want to let loose on something. And understand, if you don't understand that, you're going to think it's about you, and you're going to take a swing. And you're going to find out, where did this nuclear bomb come from? What happened? I don't even know this person. And they're so angry. How could I have made this person so angry? You didn't make that person that angry. It's a bullying spirit. There's something that's twisted and bent in their life for whatever reason. They're wrong. And they're looking for an outlet to be able to take it out on you or someone or that particular kid right there. But the Wikipedia talks about a bully pulpit is a position sufficiently conspicuous to provide an opportunity to speak out or to listen to. You get a platform, as people used to say, you know, there he is on his soapbox, you know, and he's kind of ranting or raving or whatever. But the term was coined, though, by President Theodore Roosevelt. Yeah. It was coined by Theodore Roosevelt, referred to the White House as a bully pulpit, as a bully pulpit. B-U-L-L-Y, bully pulpit, by which you can, it's meant to traffic your platform from which you advocate your agenda. Mm. And, you know, you have to understand at this particular point in time, also it means, they talk about it, it means in the sense is only distinctly related to harassing the weak. Mm-hmm. Harassing the weak, because a strong position in a situation like that, somebody just knocked the lights out of you and just say, okay, it's right. Over. It's totally mm-hmm. over.
But realize at this point, this famous bully pulpit, made famous in the name of it by President Theodore Roosevelt, has been used to agendas such as tax schemes, you know, a new idea to bring a tax about. It's been used for defending the nation from foreign enemies, foreign and domestic, which means those enemies in the nation, to expand national parks, to build monuments, to fight wars, to defeat diseases. But there's never been a bully pulpit in Washington, D.C. like there is today. The bully pulpit's being used to force America to give up its Christian God. Mm. To give up our Christian God and its supreme law of the land, the U.S. Constitution, which we all, including the President of the United States and all those folks in D.C., swore that they would uphold and protect it from enemies, foreign and domestic. But just like a bully, our leaders in Washington, D.C. have poked American citizens, and especially the church, America's founding fathers, and the American Constitution in the chest. So many times, it can only be explained as what President Theodore Roosevelt did, as being used to bully the American people, using Washington as a bully pulpit to push an agenda. But this is not national parks.
Wow.
This is not raise taxes or, you know, conservative government or liberal government and those type of things that happen in the context of a nation. This is changing the fundamentally transforming a Christian nation into a non-Christian nation and taking down our supreme law of the land and transforming it so we're no longer the same nation that we were anymore. Mm. I mean, you think of a bully just pokes at you and pokes at you. And this is what's going on. This is why I want to encourage you. Don't react the way that a kid would in school that just loses it. You're looking at right now, you're looking at some shootings that took place in school. You're looking at some of these kids coming back and said, well, they bullied me. The shooting that was in California. He said they bullied me, so he came back to the school with a shotgun, and he was gonna kill the kid, I guess, or mm-hmm. whatever. I don't know what's in his mind, but he said the kid was bullying him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't you have to understand that's what a bully wants you to do? That bullying spirit, and you have to understand we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual wickedness. Even that individual being used to bully you don't understand what's really going on. But second heaven, Satan is trying to get you to react in a way that brings destruction, division, discord, and all that kind of stuff. The bully pulpit in Washington, D.C., I mean, think about it. I'm just going to talk about a couple huge pokes in our chest. You know, allegedly, according to Congressman Michelle Bachmann, they removed radical Islam from the FBI, CIA, and all the libraries and identifying them as an enemy of our nation. It's like, what's going on? In addition to that, the Secretary of State's assistant,
Uma Abedin.
Her parents were leaders in the Muslim Brotherhood, her mother and father. Mm-hmm. That's the assistant, and allegedly according to Michelle Bachmann, she didn't even get a background check, and they didn't even vet her before they put her in the position. Then she was with the most traveled Secretary of State in the history since George Washington, in the history of America, going from nation to nation with the Muslim Brotherhood's daughter, a daughter of the Muslim Brotherhood, right there as our assistant to our Secretary of State.
Right.
Who, by the way, let me just give you a little insight here, will be the Democratic candidate for the President of the United States, and then you'll start hearing that name mm-hmm. pop up really, really soon, and they're already beginning to build that momentum now. This has been worked on for quite some time. Think about it. That's a poke in the chest. It's like, are you serious? That's what people are like, are you serious? You got the Muslim Brotherhood's daughter, you know, in... as assistant to the Secretary of State, and you hear Christians, you hear people, mm-hmm. going, kind of like reacting to that.
Right.
Think about this. They opened our borders to whoever, you know, even threatening our governor in Arizona for they sued the governor, the president, the Washington, D.C., the mm-hmm. bully pulpit in Washington, D.C., the bully in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. sued the governor for enforcing the federal laws on immigration and people coming over the border. It was the federal law.
Wow.
It wasn't the law of Arizona. It was the federal law. And then would not even support the law that's a federal law. Wow. It's a poke in the chest. I mean, did you really just go down there in front of America and take your fist and hit it in the face of this amazing, the women that are standing up right now, like Michelle Bachmann and the governor of Arizona? I mean, they're just like, you know, like, wow. You know, we need some men like that. Anyway, so then they booed God at the Democratic National Convention and reluctantly placed his name back in the platform.
Wow.
Of the Democratic Party. I mean, that's a poke. That's a huge poke in the chest of Americans. It's a bully. They open wide the doors to not only abortion, but promote it as going as a good thing. And even our president openly said from his bully pulpit he wouldn't want his own daughters to have an unwanted baby, an unwanted pregnancy as his public agenda.
Wow.
And then taking it further, they promote to make sure that it gets stopped before you can see what's going on. They promote the morning after or Plan B pills to kill the child before anybody sees it. It's poking us in the chest. I understand. I understand what you're feeling. I understand your emotions and you know, thank God you're reacting, you know, that you're having some sort of reaction. You know, they poked Israel. They poked God's eye. They poked Israel in the chest, America's friend and the apple of God's eye, by telling them you better not defend yourself, promoted the Arab Spring all the way around them with an Islamic promoted caliphate just kind of urging up from within. Even our president's first international speech, think about this. Not only did they poke our best friend in the chest, Israel, but they went, our president's first speech was in Cairo University, and he went there and he brought in the banned Muslim Brotherhood and painted a platform that America and he feels it's his duty as the president of the United States to defend any stereotypes of Islam anywhere it may be found in the world, to fight against it. I mean, this is what he said in his Cairo speech. You can whitehouse.gov. Go check it out. And he built a platform for the banned Muslim Brotherhood that took over Egypt. And now the Muslim Brotherhood, I mean, he poked America hugely in the chest. He poked Israel. And Muslim Brotherhood hates Israel, hates America. They feel they need to convert us because we need to have the Quran as the supreme law, which would be a caliphate. And he promoted them. And that's a huge poke. They passed an entire health care law and major taxes to support it without even reading it. I mean, right? The Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, as the Speaker of the House, she used to be the most powerful position in America. Now it's switched and it's totally different. This is what she said. She said, we have to pass the bill before we read it or know what's in it. That's, by the way, that's their job.
Right.
You know, our president's not supposed to defend Islam. He's supposed to defend America. That Nancy Pelosi is supposed to read the bill before they pass the bill because we don't want to. And it's like, that's a huge. Yeah, you're right. You did just get poked. That's a huge. These are pokes. You understand? You can be getting riled up, but I'm encouraging you not to respond like the kid would, because it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with an agenda. It has to do with something they want you to swing, to react in the wrong way, to react in your flesh, and understand God's in control. Think about this. They even took the Catholic Church on, telling them that they had to provide abortions for their employees if their employees wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
They took them on. I mean, literally bowed up, and then, of course, then they poked the Catholic Church in the chest, and then the Catholic Church bowed back up, and they kind of, you know, did some stuff. And then they took on Christian business owners such as the Green family that owns Hobby Lobby, and they're charging them, I believe, $500,000 a day, right? $500,000 a day in fines for not buying a program that pays for their employees having abortions.
Right.
All they have to do is say, hey, take the kill a child out, and we got it. But they won't do it. Why? Because it's agenda. It's an agenda. It's agenda to destroy the image and the likeness of God. Yes, they're poking you in the chest. Our attorney general, the head law enforcement officer in America in Washington, D.C., says that Americans have to be brainwashed, about guns. That's what he says very specifically. We have that on the torch. You can go to VFNTV.com and click on the torch and just hear, watch his lips moving when he say it. And allegedly, you know, he was supporting the selling of guns to drug lords in New Mexico that ended up killing one of our law enforcement officers with one of those guns. And then told Congress, which is your representative, when he was called to come before them to tell them what happened down there with these guns, he didn't tell them. I ain't going to tell you. He didn't tell him. And then our president covered him with the executive privilege. Of course, you're being poked in the chest. This is probably what the bully's saying. I cannot believe they haven't lost it yet.
Right.
I'm telling you.
Right.
But there's more. You know, Washington, D.C., understand this. This bully pulpit, this Washington, D.C.'s bully pulpit, and it's all of them. It's all of them, but they're not standing up for what's right. And the few that are standing up for right, you know their name. Is sending sending drones, unmanned planes with weapons over nations, over sovereign territories, and killing leaders and killing citizens of that nation, and even killing an American citizen in Yemen. An American citizen that was protected by the Constitution that they talk about, that killed, knocked this dude off, and he was supporting the same thing they support. And killed him. That you don't. It's like, how long will we live? Just read your Bible. How long will this thing live? That's a huge poke when you can fly your little airplane over my neighborhood and shoot my mother or my brother or my neighbor because you decided in your own personal mind that you can kill somebody in outside of our own laws of our land. Not only is this bullying spirit not even acknowledging the supreme law of America, which is the Constitution, but they're not even acknowledging the law of all the nations. They're flying these planes over to kill Pakistanis or Iraqis or Afghans or whoever. I mean, it's just amazing. They just go Yemen. They're just flying. He's like, there was a day that everybody would stop and look at the model airplane. And I was like, run and take cover. Right. It's the bully. They're bullying. They're bullying you. They're bullying us. And the president declares before all of America that America is no longer a Christian nation. He says this publicly. First of all, let me tell you this. That means he acknowledges that we were at one time in his mind a Christian nation. And his job, as we're seeing him fulfill his job application and his resume, is to transform that from a Christian nation to an Islamic nation. Islamic nation. Mm-hmm. By the way, they can't coexist. If somebody says, I got to kill you, convert you, or make you a slave, another one says, I'll love you, I'll go with you another extra mile, you'll punch me in one cheek, I'll turn the other. You know, we'll pray for those in authority over us that we can coexist with anybody because Christ is in me, not in some building. We're not. It's just amazing, just totally amazing. Right. Those can't coexist, and one's not going to make it. And so he says we're no longer a Christian nation. America isn't. Then he says we're an Islamic nation in addition to that. And he says, and he tells Islam, who seeks a caliphate, which is their Quran being the ultimate law of the land, saying that, come on in. As a matter of fact, I'll just give you a nice dinner at the White House, which is not his house. It's our house.
It's the people's house.
It's the people's house. And so the people's house brought in a Muslims to have a friendly dinner with Islam, which he says, this is who we are now. And then he tells us, he says very specifically, and I want you to hear it yourself, he says very specifically that he's going to do everything he can to promote zakat. And zakat is something that most Americans don't have a clue about. Most Americans, we don't have a clue about anything. We're having to learn, man, quickly. And I encourage you, if you haven't learned yet, start learning because you're going to need to learn. But I want you to hear this first. I want you to hear the President of the United States talk about and zakat. Let me tell you what it is. Zakat is, that's Z-A-K-A-T, is an Islamic tax. It's not an offering. It's a tax. Like you have tax for government. It's a government. It's an Islamic caliphate type government, and it's a tax. And so he's talking about this tax that has to be paid in Islam, and he's wanting to be able to fix America where that tax can be paid in America. Listen up.
In the United States, rules on charitable giving have made it harder for Muslims to fulfill their religious obligation. That's why I'm committed to working with American Muslims to ensure that they can fulfill zakat.
What he's saying is he wants to adjust the laws of the land to support zakat. And in the Quran, which is chapter 2, verse 177, says this is what he says in the Quran. Righteousness is not turning your face towards the east. Righteousness is not turning your face towards the east or the west. Righteousness are those who believe in God, the last day, the angels, the scriptures, the prophets, and they give money. They give the money cheerfully to the relatives, to the orphans, to the needy, traveling aliens, beggars, to free slaves, and they observe the contact prayer and give obligatory charity, and they keep their word whenever they make promises, and they steadfast persevere in the face of persecution, hardship, and war.
Wow.
Reportedly, what's taking place, according to that, is 1/8 of that zakat goes to war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're being, like, how many times are you going to poke us in the chest? You're telling me we're no longer a Christian nation, but now you're going to promote war against Christians and Jews?
Wow.
You're going to make it available at a nonprofit. The reason why is you can't get a nonprofit status, a corporation, nonprofit 501c3 corporation, which is a tax-exempt religious organization in America, is because 1/8 of that goes towards war, according to the Quran.
Wow.
And he's saying at the same time that he's poking us in the chest about taking our guns, he's saying, listen, I want to make sure that 1/8 of the war that you're going to pay for is going to be tax-deductible. Understand that. Understand that you know, we are getting poked to the chest, but there is a response to this. Listen, our president publicly says that America runs to guns and religion in hard times. Of course, America runs to the First and the Second Amendment. That's what you're saying. The First and the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution and the supreme law of the land when it's our personal freedoms or America's rights are being threatened. That's what you're supposed to do. If somebody tries to take your cookies, you know, you stand up and say, hey, get away from my cookies. If somebody tries to take your rights, you stand up. Stop taking my rights. If somebody tries to take your constitution, you stand up and you say no. If somebody tries to take your First Amendment rights to be able to worship freely and to gather, you go no. Of course you run to it. Of course you run to it. We have to wake up, but understand this is a bullying spirit. This current leaders from this bully pulpit in Washington, D.C., is fundamentally transforming America from its once Christian roots, the U.S. Constitution being the supreme law of land, the right to life, to bear arms, to worship freely, and defend it from enemies foreign and domestic right in our very faces, and they are using our lust, our greed, our idolatry, our pride, our sin to take it from us. Don't fall prey to Washington's bully pulpit that is poking your very existence in the chest so many times that your flesh wants to react and start falling possibly to rage, which is raw anger going everywhere, rebellion to God's expectations of us and lawlessness. Repent. Don't hit the streets. Hit your knees. Listen, you're not going to win. He just wants you to swing. Washington wants you to swing. Washington wants you to go, you know, and react in your flesh. And it's our flesh that got us into this place. It's our flesh that got him and them there. This is not a Washington problem. This is not a Republican or a Democratic problem. This is a Christian problem. This is a church problem. It's us.
Wow.
He says, if my people, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, that's our sin, then God will hear from heaven and heal our land. Understand that this thing is turning in rapidly. We're seeing our whole nation being turned over right in our very faces, and you're watching blind minds not even acknowledge what's taking place because we're getting our stuff. It's like, hey, I get to do this sin and nobody's going to tell me it's wrong. And hey, they'll actually bless this and bless that and bless this. I suppose the state can bless it, not realizing it doesn't matter if God says it's legal or not. It matters what God says for us as Christians. You don't get a blanket permission to go rob banks because all of a sudden because all of a sudden the government says it's okay to rob banks now. If God says it's a sin to rob banks, it's still a sin to rob banks, even though your government made it legal again. Legal, and understand this, then you'll stand before the throne of God, and you can't say, hey, God, hey, they passed a law that says I can sin. You have to understand, No, you're going to pull that up, and God's going to pull his word up, and he's going to judge you by it, and you're going to end up eternally separated from him in hell. Understand, this is a huge, and we think about this. You know, go back to the word of God and see how God's people have handled these type of situations. It is not new. It has really happened again and again and again and again, and understand that Jesus tells us, in the Beatitudes, how we're supposed to respond. Listen, we're supposed to embrace this weakness, you know, as Pat was talking about in the early parts. Embrace our dependency on God and our desperate need for him and our willingness to be taken advantage of, our willingness to be treated disrespectfully, you know, you think about this. Look at those that have gone before, such as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., as he was facing the wrath of an evil national stronghold that had been in America since its founding.
Wow.
Since its founding now. He stood bold in his constitutional rights humbly before God's eye and did not give in to this horrific bullying. And it was horrific bullying and hatred, abuse, and turned violent or rebellious and raging. You notice that when you look at those that did, they were just like vapors in the wind. They just kind of stood up and they said, we're going to fight the man, you know, and you talk about the Black Panther Party. You talk about, you know, Malcolm X, all these different ones. They just kind of like, boom, just up and gone.
No more.
But today we have streets in America named after a Christian minister named Dr. Martin Luther King, because he understood what God tells us, how we're supposed to stand up for what's right. Mm-hmm. And there's a way to do it. We can look at his life and we can imitate those that have gone before us and see. I mean, Jesus did it as well. But look, I mean, right in our present day in America, standing up for constitutional rights. I mean, this is what he said. He says, I'm just holding you to what's on the paper. Mm-hmm. It's time for the Christians to stand up and say, listen, we're just holding you to the First Amendment. We're just holding you to the Second Amendment. Did they suffer? Yeah. Did they go to jail? Yeah. But you know what? They appeared in courts when they had a judge that wasn't crooked. They got back out and they got freed and the law changed. He went all the way to Washington, D.C. He looked President Kennedy in the face and he said, this has to be done. I mean, he was bold everywhere he went. He went and people followed him, but he would look at people who wanted to go to their flesh, who wanted to rage, who wanted to be violent. And he would say, no, that is not the answer. But understand what I'm telling you. It's what the bully wants. Satan wants you to throw a swing. He wants you to throw the first punch. And listen, he has a rage inside of his heart. He was thrown out of heaven. He wanted to be like God. He wanted to be exalted. He wanted to be worshipped. He wanted more glory than God. And he has a rage inside of him. If you swing at Satan in your flesh instead of falling to your knees in God, you are not going to like the outcome. You are not going to like the outcome. And I'm hearing people talking. I'm thinking, you're swinging at this thing in the flesh, and it is not going to be good. Understand that when you look at the concentration camps, when you look at Auschwitz and you look at the trains and the ghettos and the things that has been done to God's people, to the Jews, understand that's a rage. It's a bully rage that Satan has against God's people and mankind. You know why he wants to kill the babies? Because the babies are made in God. You can nip it in the bud if you nip it in the womb. That's what they say. I bet you in hell. They say, if you could kill that kid in the womb, If you nip it in the wound, you can nip it in the bud, because he wants to destroy every form of image of God, because that person, you know, would live a life like we're living today for God and God's glory and giving him praise. But understand this, that he has a rage. And if you take a swing at him, I'm telling you right now, if you don't listen to those that have gone before us, Jesus, if you don't listen to, we saw walked out in America, Dr. King in America, under this Constitution, under God, walked it out in a way that we can imitate him, that he did not take a swing, even when they were taking a swing at him. Even when they put dogs out, even when they took fire hoses out. I mean, he just stood. He stood for what was right. He stood within the Constitution. He wasn't lawless. He wasn't rebellious. He read the documents. He read the Bible, and he says, listen, this is right. And let me tell you, this is the ultimate thing. And he was willing to lay down his life for the next generation. We are the most narcissistic, self-focused, greedy people, where we actually kill our children in the womb so that we can have a better life and not go through the suffering and have to speak into somebody else's life. We'll leave relationships. We'll leave everything instead of saying, you know what, I'm going to stay and stand even when it stinks, because this is the right thing to do. This is not just about me. Dr. King was willing to lay down his life. He knew the words of Jesus when he said, greater love hath no man. Then he laid down his life for a friend. He said, you know, I've been to the mountaintop, but I might not get there with you. He understood that he might not see this thing that he was believing for and standing for, but he was okay with that. But you know what? So many people aren't okay with that. They say, listen, I'll stand for it if I get it. You know, I'll stand for it. I'll fight for it if I get the benefits of this. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not for the next generation because I've already killed them in the womb. Mm-hmm. But we say, you know what? God, forgive us. Fall to our knees. Not fall to anger. Fall to our knees. And somebody says, well, you know, what attitude should we have? Listen, we have to break this narcissism, this plague of narcissism in this generation who kill our children in the womb because it would just cause struggle, and not to have a life that, hey, I deserve this life. You know, we have to repent for the attitude. What's in it for me? We as Christians need to realize that it was settled for us. The question, what's in it for us? Was settled for us over 2,000 years ago on the cross of Christ. It was settled. It was settled for us. We're not looking to be settled in this age. We're not living for this life alone. We're living for the life to come. Understand, it was settled for us over 2,000 years ago. It's not for this life we live, but for the eternal life that we have in Jesus Christ, which means this, that you know what? We win by loving our enemies. We win right. by laying down our lives. We win by being taken advantage of and entrusting God who judges justly. We win by suffering for doing right and being called that we're wrong. The Apostle Peter told us this. We win when we refuse to fall to rage, rebellion, and lawlessness and fall to our knees saying, God, you won. God, you've won my heart. Forgive my sin. I will leave this life of sin. I will own my sin. I will stop blaming past generations and others and acknowledge this is mine. I own it. Lord, it's wrong. God, forgive me. I will become your disciple. I will read, study, and meditate on your commands that I wouldn't hide your words in my heart, that I wouldn't sin against you. God, you won my heart. Well, we're coming to the end of the first hour. We had such a wonderful time. Don't forget to catch us in the extra hour beginning in just a moment. For those that are leaving us, you can catch us at VFNTV.com or catch the second half, the extra hour, on your mobile device, your iPhone, your Android, and all those wonderful places at VFNTV.com. You're listening to VFN Radio. For those who are sticking with us, we'll see you on the other side.